across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, I hope that your life is okay at the moment. Northern Hemisphere, of course, we're moving inexorably towards summer, and it's the opposite story down in the south. But, you know, whatever the climatic conditions are, I hope that you're happy, and I hope that things are good for you. Thank you for all of the messages that you've been sending recently. Know that you can always keep in touch with what I'm up to by going to my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. There, if there's any information about the TV show or about the podcast or about me or anything, I'll always put it there first. So if there are ever any questions. And just to say this, I've had a lot of communications about the TV show. And please just know, and I know I've said this before, that there are things that you talk to me about, like the duration of the show and stuff like that, that are not in my control. So, you know, those are things that need to be directed towards them. And I know that, you know, some of you have experienced, or rather expressed views about it all. And some of those issues that you've raised are things that I don't control. I control this. This is my thing. The online show, the website, and of course, the title, the name, it all came from me. It's my creation in a way. That is not meant to sound grand or anything like that. But, you know, I created this show more than 16 years ago as a podcast. And it went onto the radio more than 6 years ago and is now on the television too. And I'm learning all the time about that. But, you know, any thoughts about technically the way that that is done, I don't control any of that. And, you know, you kind of need to know that. But anything to do with the podcast, then, you know, I'm in complete control of this. This is my world, as they say. You can always get in touch with me by emailing through the website, theunexplained.tv, designed and created by Adam, my webmaster. And you'll find a link there to send me an email. Or you can also do mail@theunexplained.tv. That'll also reach me. Okay, I think that's basically all of it. Now, the guest on this edition is a medium. And he's a Canadian guy called Jim Hunt. He's been on television, in particular, a show called Knock Knock Ghost that he was on. I think it's on Amazon Prime at the moment. And he traveled a lot. I'm reading from some blurb here. Travels the world searching for answers to some of our biggest questions about what happens when we die. I think we all want the answers to those sort of questions. So Jim Hunt is the guest here, a very down-to-earth medium. But, you know, I have to say, as I always say, when I do a show with a medium, I know that not everybody listening to this likes this subject or enjoys hearing conversations with mediums. I think Jim is very different. I think he's got some interesting things to say from what I've been made aware of, and that's why I'm doing it. But if it's not your thing, then please don't hesitate to turn off right now. And, you know, we'll talk again together on the next show, which will be about something different. But just to tell you that, I am perennially fascinated by the field. I am forever fascinated by the notion that there may be something beyond this life. I don't know whether there is or there isn't. I have a gut feeling that there may well be, but I may be wrong. I guess that's where I'm at, and maybe you're there too. So Jim Hunt in Toronto, Canada, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained. When you get in touch with me, I know I say this like a broken record, but when you get in touch with me, please tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. And if you've been listening for a long time, I had a communication from one person who listened from the old days on Talk Sport Radio, and that's like 2004 to 2006, and only recently rediscovered the show, which is a wonderful thing. You know, tell me your story and how you discovered this show, and, you know, what use you make of it, if any. Always interested to hear those real-life stories, because we are a family doing this thing. Okay, let's get to the guest now in Canada, medium Jim Hunt. Jim, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Thank you, and I'm looking forward to this, Howard.
Now, I want to get your life story, because your life story is as important and totally intertwined, of course, in what you do. But before I do that, I just want to ask a couple of things about you, because I saw and made a point of watching one interview with you. I haven't done a lot of preparation for this one, because this is a awesome conversation. I just wanted to see where it went. You know, it's much more beautiful fun that way.
Oh, it's so much, much more fun.
But it seems to me that you are very much your own person, that you have reached a stage in life where if there are some people, and look, I get emails from all persuasions from people who say, you've got a medium on your show, I don't want that. Others saying, I'm glad you've explored this topic again, Howard. Well, I'm hugely interested in it, so I'm going to do it, is my view. But right. You've got to a stage where you really don't care what people think.
No. But I mean it with love and integrity and honesty, and I bring that out in my readings. I bring that out in my life coaching, and I bring that out to my beautiful wife and my 5-year-old daughter, which I've started all over again. Yeah, I know, it's a lot of fun. What I believe is, I'm not going to sensationalize what I do. If you're looking for poltergeist hunters and all of that stuff, if you're looking for the dark energy, I've been there, I've done that, and I'm not interested. My interest is saving the spirit world, who are in the light, who are positive, who want to go home, who want to start all over again, a new soul life, and to take them out of that mess and move them forward. And I found that in the entertainment world, you needed to be, I needed to have a lot of chains around my neck and my shirt undone past my belly button. And I had to have a haircut to look like Elvis Presley just to get meetings. So I just said, no, I can't do that.
All right. So, I mean, you do have TV credits to your name. Are you telling me that you've largely given up a lot of that stuff?
I left Knock Knock Ghost after the second year. We were nominated here in Canada for Best Reality TV Show 2 years in a row. And it wasn't doing it for me. And I'm not taking anything away from the show. The producer was great. The show was very good, but it wasn't my angle. I wanted to release the dead, and they wanted me to scare people about the dead. And I'm done about that kind of thing.
No, well, I understand there are imperatives when you do these things, but you know, if you have a force that is impelling you or compelling you to be something that you're not, then you have to go with your heart, in my experience. But a lot of people don't do that. But that's a whole other issue for a whole other time. So you've decided to be true to yourself and the things that you do.
Yes.
Now, in many ways, your story is typical of a lot of mediums, because everything started for you very young. But it's atypical in that you only really, it seems to me, unless I've misread your biography, you only really started to capitalize on this gift later in life. So it came to you early, but you didn't do anything about it.
No, I was protected by my mother, a grandmother, and many different spiritual people out there, was to hone in on our abilities, to be able to use them for the right reasons and not to use them to sensationalize or do anything. And the times that I did do it when I was younger, it was a catastrophe for me. You know, meeting someone and just saying, oh, look, you know, he's not doing so well. And you take a look at his aura colors or whatever, and you know that he might be passing away. And you're not here to be a god or to be somebody else, but you know that this person's going to pass away, and you feel very sad for it. And if you made mention of it, you were hushed, or you were told, hey, you're not God, you're not this, you're not that, so you don't say a word anymore about this. So I learned to be hush up about it very, very quickly. And it was until I could not keep it in any longer about certain things and values that needed to be said. And then it just opened up so many different doors for me. I left an engineering job to do what I do, and I love every minute of it, thank goodness. So.
And when you were working in the orthodox world of everyday business and engineering and things that you were doing, and I know that you have a degree in a sort of related field. I think that's, I seem to remember from that interview I watched in logistics. So you were very much feet in the ordinary workaday business world.
Absolutely.
So there must have been forces, and I'm kind of talking forces beyond this realm, tugging and pulling on you to make you do that, do you feel?
I was asked a lot by the spirit world themselves to say, hey, do you think you can help this person? This person needs a little bit of direction. Just give them my name, tell them what I've done. And it could have been a grandfather, it could have been a dad, a mom, a brother, a sister, and just saying, you know, you're so upset, for an example, you're so upset that you didn't make your brother's funeral, but your brother's been around you since he passed away. And he was glad that you weren't there. for him to pass, because it would have been more traumatic for you. And at this way, you know, he's gone to the light. He's happy. And he's even happier for you that you're living your life and you're living your purpose. And that's the kind of messages that I love to give to people.
But in the world of business, and here I am jumping in, sorry for that, but in the world of business, what happens if the person that you sense that information about happens to be somebody up the chain of management? In other words, your boss. Did you find yourself coming out with it in situations like that, or did you always hold yourself back?
A majority of the time I did hold myself back. There would have been some instances saying, hey, you know, bud, I'm not going to give him his name, but I just said, I don't think you should be on the road today. Maybe you should just stick it out here. I mean, you're exhausted, you're tired and everything else. And he would just say, oh, no, Jim, I'm going to be fine. I'm just going to go here. And he ended up in a car accident, and a pretty bad one at that time. And he just said, I guess I should have listened to you, eh? And I just said, well, you should have. I really did not come out and just say, hey, guess what? I'm a psychic. And your grandfather just said, don't drive the car today. You're going to have a car accident.
Right.
I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it because I didn't feel confident enough at that time.
Yeah, because you wouldn't know what the reaction might be, I would guess. Oh. And that is probably true for an awful lot of situations.
Many.
What's the difference between what you've just described and empathy? You know, if you're empathetic towards people, and I think I am, you know, I'm often, I can't give myself any advice. I'm useless at that. But I'm very good at giving other people very good advice. I wish I could give it to myself because it would be a great benefit to my life. But what's the difference between what you told that man about, or what you wanted to tell that man about not driving, and, you know, and just being empathetic towards him? How can you be sure that you were being guided to do that?
I talk to dead people, and I see dead people, and I see dead people around every human being, whether it be closed circuit TV or someone beside me. I get voices that talk to me and have a conversation with me, and I utilize that information to the best of my ability, not to freak people out, but to give them honest, empathic information. If they're I know the difference between empathic people who feel like they don't have an intuitive part in their body, but they do, they just don't realize it. And my empathic side is I'm being given a auditory or a visual conversation by the dead to give me information to the living. Empaths or doctors, some lawyers, policemen, regular Joes on the street, they come up to you and just say, oh, you don't look well today. Are you okay? And that's a nice thing. That's a nice gesture from an empath. But for me, I know that person didn't have a nice day because he just got fired from a job by protecting somebody else who did something wrong. And they got lost out on a job. And I'm just saying, hey, listen, I'm sorry you lost your job, but you're going to get a better one tomorrow. And they look at you and they look at you very weird. And I'm just saying, it's just what I feel. And, you know, lo and behold, I don't give out business cards and just say, give me a call. They sort of remember my name is Jim Hunt. They look me up and then boom, oh, you're a psychic. Why didn't you give me more information or whatever the case may be? But
yeah, and you're my new best friend.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a party favor and I don't do that anymore either.
Okay. All right. So the connection between, and not all mediums claim this, but the connection between knowing the future, in inverted commas, and talking to the dead, what is that connection?
It's a good question.
Well, how does one relate to the other, I suppose, is what I'm saying, because you know, I've interviewed a lot of mediums in my time, and some of them say I talk to the dead and I can predict the future along with that because they help me do it, and some of them say I just talk to the dead.
Well, I think a good medium is the first statement where you talk to the dead and they're going to give you some information about their future, like to protect somebody from not getting hurt or a love interest that has gone bad or a sickness that can be prevented. That's maybe some of the things that we do because we should be healers over anything else. And we take what we have in our abilities and share that with people. And it's not so much that we're doing this 24 hours, 7 days a week. They knock on our door when it's prevalent, when it's something that's important to someone. And we don't get information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It could be, you can go, you can go radio silence for 10 hours or so. That's the longest that's ever been for me. And then then all of a sudden it comes alive again, and I'm giving information to the guy that is on the subway beside me on a train, saying, "Hey, you just be careful and take care of your father, because he still needs to see you." They'll look at you weird, and they said, "My father's in an old folks home." And I said, "Well, you better go see him today." Mm. Those type of things. And we give that information. I know we sound weird, but that we're messengers, and good messengers. And the ones that are out there to frighten you or to say, "Hey, you know what? I've got this information for you. Throw me $50 and I'll get you more information." Those are the people that I want to stop.
You have to have a huge level of confidence, though, don't you, to see this thing through? You must have a certainty within.
I have a great deal of confidence in what I do, but it comes with a price of depression and anxiety, because it's hard for us to make a complete friend. It's hard for us not to be a party favor. Oh, Jim Hunt, he's coming to a barbecue with us, and then you get trounced by being asked a million questions about what they do, what do you see in me today, and ha ha ha, and all this kind of stuff. And those things, I don't want to be involved in that. So you end up being almost reclusive in a way. So we're protecting ourselves from other people that don't get it.
Right. You're protecting yourself from yourself in a way, though, aren't you? You're protecting yourself from that gift. There's that word again. Mm-hmm. And what that gift may deliver to you in a social situation or a situation where you don't want the gift to be giving you anything.
And this is where our old school values of saying it's a gift when it is, and that's how we perceive it. But it is an ability. It is something that is a little bit stronger than you per se reading into somebody. I'm sure you're a great profiler for what you do, and you've been around for a long time, so you can profile someone really well. I don't necessarily have that ability to profile someone. I have an ability to listen to someone talking to me and just saying, "Well, he's this, this, and this," so you be very careful in giving him information or her information, because it can be used against you, or it won't be taken very lightly.
You said something very interesting at the beginning of this, Jim. You said that in your belief, everybody is surrounded by dead people. In other words, those who have gone before are around us all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a big surprise to a lot of people listening to this who may have lost people, as I have, and, you know, be wanting to know that they're around me, but not being entirely sure. You're saying that it's something that's omnipresent.
We are surrounded. You can walk into a movie theater, for instance, in the daylight, and everyone's sitting before the movie starts, and I can see the dead in daylight or in nighttime, and everyone is sitting with someone, or someone is sitting with someone, or someone is in despair, but they're sitting at a movie to get away from something, and they have a lot of spirits that are turning around looking for someone like a intuitive to say, "Can you give my brother a message? Can you give my sister a message? Can you give this person a message and say that everything is going to be okay?" And it can be draining, but there are the spirit world, the dead people that are around us are not always family, but they're from past lives, friends or foes or other people that we've had contracts with for centuries. And we've come back and reinitiated that contract, and we meet people, and it's not, by circumstance, we're meeting somebody again in this lifetime from another past life because we didn't complete that contract with them, and we have to finish it this time.
When you
there's
say
so many
contract,
different variations.
There certainly sound like there are. When you say contract, how do you mean that?
So you and I are sitting here, we're talking, we're having a conversation, and I remembered something that would have attached itself to me, remembering that you committed suicide in a past life. And this life, you've come and you've become very, very sad and upset, and you don't know why. And I never was able to help you prevent you from committing suicide. But in this lifetime, I'm just saying, "Hey, you know what, Howard? You had a hard time in your 20s, and you weren't doing very well, and you had no one to talk to. I'm here for you. And if you want to talk about anything, I'm not going to judge you. Let me know what's going on. It's a contract that you should have completed in that lifetime that you're completing now. And then you can cut ties and sever those ties, and you can move on to something different. We're doing that in our world right now. And everyone has a contract with somebody in their lives spiritually that they're trying to fix, or the empathic person that can never fix themselves, or the person that marries the alcoholic or the drug addict, and they think that they can fix them. And it's a contract that they are actually trying to serve again. And what I've been learning in the last 10 years is to teach people how to break those contracts, not to have to serve that person that is dysfunctional, and not to cut ties with them completely, but not to take the responsibility to keep that alcoholic dry, or to have that drug addict from not having some more drugs, or whatever the case may be, or whatever their habit is. It's the responsibility of the person that's in front of you, their soul life. It's up to them to try and remove that. They have to speak to their higher selves, their higher being, to heal. And what we get to do as psychic mediums is talk to your higher self, find out what your disconnect is, and just say, hey, in this life, you died unexpectedly, and now you're living your life to the fullest. Maybe you should slow it down a little bit and see what's in front of you and take your time and have fun this time, not overdoing it. And some people get it, and all of a sudden they go, you know, you're right. Maybe I do need to slow down. So that's why there's so many variables for psychic mediums whose responsibility is to give you that information. And I take that responsibility seriously.
So are you saying that everybody in this world, whether they know it or not, and a lot of people, I suspect, won't know it, is here fulfilling some kind of course or direction and trying to rectify something that maybe has gone wrong before? You know, in a past life, they've done something bad, or they've not achieved to their full potential, or they haven't got together with those that they've loved, and all of those things are issues. And are you saying that you kind of put them all in a great kit bag and bring them down here and you try and work them out again? And that's all of our role.
I think that's all of our roles. And I think that when we go through certain things in our life experiences right now, we have to learn that, why am I continuously feel like I'm in this cycle? Or why am I still so sad, even though I have everything in front of me? And it's to do this inventory, and maybe to speak to a psychic or a psychic medium and just say, hey, there's something about your past life here where you did do something foolish, like murder someone out of jealousy, and you're still jealous, but you don't have the ability to murder anybody this time, but you're over jealous and you lose relationships. And maybe you should get help for that jealousy. And that's breaking a contract with yourself that you don't have to do that anymore. And then they figure it out. Oh, maybe that's what it is. And you mentally and spiritually let go of that past life, so that you can move into this life and let go of that aspect of jealousy or hatred or bigotry and anger and all everything that's going on in our world right now.
Psychologists would say that you are muscling in on territory that you shouldn't be muscling in on.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I don't have a medical degree whatsoever, and I don't profess to, and I don't give medical advice. I give the information just saying, why are you jealous? Maybe it's this past life that you did this, or whatever the case may be, but I will never give medical instruction on to what to do. I will always say, you need to see a therapist, you need to see a psychiatrist, or your depression, maybe see a doctor on that, and get on some form of medication to calm you.
Well, I'm glad you do say that, because obviously there are those who wouldn't say that, and that's when it becomes dangerous. So I think to put that caveat in there and to say to somebody who's got a real issue, you need to be seeing a medical professional, makes eminent sense, and is something that, you know, if I was doing this on a broadcast platform, I would be saying now, but number one, because it's common sense, and number two, because I would be required to. Now, the one thing I didn't say about you, and I think it's valid to do this, I did say that you are atypical in many ways, because you came to the, or you started to use this quite late in life, and you had a career that you could have quite happily proceeded with and made money at. But you're typical in that your experiences began early, and I understand that you started to have experiences as young as five.
Yes, it's one of my most favorite stories in the world. It's just, and I'll repeat it forever. And I was five. I was too old because I was born in October, so I couldn't go to school in kindergarten because of this age thing that whatever they do in the education system. So I was stuck a year behind everybody. So I was sitting in a sandbox. September, everyone has gone to school. I'm in this sandbox. And I'm just playing away while everyone goes to school and they can hear the school year going on. And I'm sitting here and I see this man kitty corner in this sandbox. Now, this was a community sandbox. It was like 20 feet by 20 feet, kind of. It was pretty big. So he was at a distance. This was the 60s. So safety wasn't a big deal. There's an old person in the sandbox. He's just watching out for the kids. I'm watching him. And he's not saying a word to me, but he's pointing to a certain section of the sandbox. And I'm looking, I'm going, what the heck is he doing? And he kept on pointing and pointing and pointing. I'm going, okay. I grab my little pail, my little shovel and start digging. And lo and behold, I was crying constantly to my mother saying, I lost my G.I. Joe space capsule and the G.I. Joe, and I don't know where he is. And I unburied him. And it was that ghost that pointed him out to where my G.I. Joe capsule was. I was elated. And that was my very first experience, which was absolutely positive.
Okay, we have so to say for listeners in the UK, the G.I. Joe I had one is Action Man.
Action Man
is what they call them in the UK. And the space capsule, in fact, behind me in this little tiny apartment, I have got that space capsule. I had the same thing that you had.
Oh my God,
for Action,
I'm jealous.
For Action Man. And, you know, as kids in that era, you know, right up to the 70s, these things were out. We absolutely loved these things. Now, how do you know that the person who told you where to find this was a ghost?
Because when I was so digging away, not paying attention, I'm a child, and turned around, he was gone.
Right.
And he was just
were you
gone.
Scared?
Like, no, because you can't. Here's the thing about the dead. Most of the dead are the most amazing energies that you can get. They are the most loving, caring, helpful spirits out there. They have gone and have been traumatized, and not all of them, but some of them have, and they're here to help us prevent us from being traumatized or hurt or doing things to give us messages, to protect us, to help us move forward, to gain our soul levels, to be a better human being, to be a better person, to be a better father, to be a better brother, to be a better friend. And the spirit world, 95% of them are that way.
The 95.
Easily. The other five, this is my percentage, this is my thoughts, and there are other spirits, other psychic mediums who will tell you the same thing. The 5% of the dark energy, if you're going to go look for something bad, you're going to run into that. If you're looking for a poltergeist, it's going to go there. A poltergeist will not waste their time on me because I'm not looking for them. I'm looking to release the spirits that are good and move them into the light so they can go away. I have dealt with dark energy. I have dealt with poltergeist. I have dealt with the most evil of energies. And I am so protected, Howard, by the light energy, by my demonologist, by so many different people, because I don't give two craps about the dark energy. They can stay there. I don't give them the right time of day. When I have to, I will, but they'll go away. I will do everything in my power to lock them up back in their cage, not to come anywhere near us.
Right. So is it true, as a lot of people have said to me over the years, that anything bad, and you know, I've come across people, certainly in my media career when I was younger, and I always felt that they were very, very ill-motivated people, and sometimes I felt that there was something about them that was not good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was told by a couple of people who I consulted back then, and I was always questing for answers, that if there is such a thing as a dark side and dark energy, and you will tell me that there is, it is only effective to the degree that you let it in.
Absolutely, 100%. And we do that as human beings. We let other negative and challenged human beings grab us and convert us into doing something that's bad and mischievous. We all have an ability to make up our own minds, which we do. And they're not always perfect, and we're not perfect. I'm not perfect. And I know I've made mistakes, and I've heeded my mistakes, and I've paid for my mistakes. But some people will continuously do the wrong thing because they are pretty well controlled by that negative environment. And the spirit world is no different. And I'm telling you, it's just such a... I'm disappointed with what we've been seeing on TV with the sensationalism, and I get in trouble for saying that because now everyone is trying to heal or let the spirits go now all of a sudden. They're trying to be more polite and more helpful. They've changed their focus and their let's not look for the dark energy anymore and let's look for the light and see if we can help them. Why is this house being haunted? The house isn't being haunted. These people are just trying to give messages to say, you know what? I had a shitty life and I need to fix that.
And my apologies to any listener who might be offended by that word.
I'm so sorry.
I don't know. Well, not at all. I don't think there will be anybody, but just to say that. Interesting you say that. Hauntings. Yes. I mean, that's the stuff of 1,000 TV shows at the moment.
It is.
And I read, I have to say, it was quite a nice article today about it was from somebody not in this country who had identified the 5 signs, according to this article, that your house is haunted. Do you believe in hauntings? Do you believe that there are some places, and Canada has theatres and a load of buildings, from what I've heard from people I've interviewed there, you know, do you believe that there are places and homes and locations that are haunted? If so, what is that?
They are there. They have not moved. The hauntings of the darker energy or the gray energy, those type of things, are not always polite. And they're leaving a message and they're warning people that they're still in that energy of jealousy, anger. They're frightened souls themselves that want to frighten us to keep them away from their property. They still believe that that theater where they acted for 30 years still belongs to them. They were the top knot. And all of a sudden they pass away. Others are taking their steps or moving into the limelight, and they'll try and make people feel uncomfortable in the energy. They'll make people all of a sudden forget their lines because they're standing right in front of their face and they're moving the energy around that they make us forget or do things. They have that strength to be able to do so. And what your job is, or my job is to say, hey, stop punishing somebody for doing their job and having fun with it. Leave them alone. Get out of here, or I'll make sure that you're gone, and we'll do the exorcism to get rid of you. We will make sure that no one will ever pay attention to you. Mm. Be better. Help these people. Make them feel better. Make them professionals. Give them an applause, because you're part of that applause by making them look better on stage. Those are just simple things that I would say to get that darker energy to see a different light. And if they don't, I teach people how to get rid of them. I teach people that they don't belong. If they're going to do that, remove them from the room. Say they're no longer allowed in here. There's certain things that we can do in respect to the Aboriginal world, is smudging, or we call it smoke, and we remove anything that's not warranted in that room or in that theater, anywhere, even in property, you can get rid of things. It's about the mindset and letting people go and making people feel safe where they are.
Right. You use the E word, exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you've been involved in some.
I've been in a few.
How do they work? I know what I've seen in the movies, and I've interviewed a lot of people, you know, connected in some ways with these things. Andrea Perrin, you know, from the movie The Conjuring, and the 2 books that she's written about the house that she was brought up in. I mean, that's an astonishing story. But when you come to need to get rid of something, and look, just on a personal level, and I'm sure there will be listeners who will disagree with me, I believe that there are places that have presences within them that can be quite, quite sober and joyous in some cases, and there are presences that are, you know, deleterious to the location. The idea that you can get rid of them is a very appealing one, I think, for people who reside in such places, but how do you go about doing it?
Well, there are so many different Catholic, in Catholicism, to get rid of them, the holy water, the cross, the saying the prayers, doing those type of things. And there are so many different religious beliefs that you can use whatever there is to get rid of these things. But it's what the proper, there is no proper way. It is, you have to find their weakness. You have to find out and do a history as to what they're doing there or why they're doing it, which is what a lot of new intuitive investigators are doing. The paranormal investigators who don't use their abilities or don't have any per se, they can't give you an answer. They're never going to give you an answer. And I'm sorry, guys, you just won't. But if you get a psychic medium, an intuitive into a home, and they are there to conjure up something, you got to find out why they're there, find out the history as to, was someone a murderess? Were they murderers? Were they murdered? Did they kill themselves along with the family that they murdered? If they're in there, that energy is in a loop, and they continuously do that, and they want to bring everybody into that energy. And what we do is you learn to break that energy up, and you make the spirit world feel comfortable with who we are in the living, and just say, we are here to help. They haven't heard that in a long time. And if you don't show fear to the dark energy, and they can do things to you, and you really? Don't, oh, I've been scratched, prodded, and stabbed.
Stabbed?
And I was shivved in a prison, and it was very crazy. Sheesh. And they had it on air, and I got rid of that entity because I said, you touch me again, and if I die because of this, I will haunt you for the rest of your spiritual career. I've never seen them again because you give that threat back to them.
So hold on, you were in a prison and you were, you know, roughed up slightly. Is that right?
Yes. We were doing a TV show, and it was in Godrich, Ontario, mm-hmm. in Canada. And I was walking up the stairs, and I was too close to a prison cell, allegedly, where they were telling you to stay in the middle of the hallway. And I got shivved on the right-hand side. It was on the camera. They were showing that I was bleeding. I felt a little warm. And I had like a pencil mark inside my skin. And it drew blood.
Something tried to stab you.
Oh, yes. And it was not a very good one. And it was someone who was, I think it was the last hanging in Godrich, the last person to be hung.
And you communicated with that person, and you
Absolutely.
Said, I'm not going to take any more of your garbage. And if you give me any more garbage, then if anything happens to me, I'm coming for you. And that was enough to get rid of them.
That was all that it needed to be. I was not being a bully. I was just showing I'm taking my defensive side. I'm not allowing you to petrify me or scare me or deal with me, and you can move on because it's never going to happen again. And it's almost like they know, and they leave because they know who I am as a human being, because they can attach themselves to you. They can follow you. They can look at you, and I don't give them the right time of day. I don't. Get off of me. You're not welcome. I walk into my home. I have a family to protect here. Whenever I'm finished the show, mm-hmm. I had a crew to take care of. My responsibility was to make sure that nobody had an attachment, and they never did.
Because people who investigate these things do say sometimes that you have to be terribly careful that you don't bring a souvenir home from your investigation, something that you wouldn't want to have in your home.
Exactly. And a lot of people think that it's, this is where the intuitive side of me goes, man, we as humans are not taking this seriously. And then they have this attachment where they feel depressed and sick all the time or suicidal. And I've seen it go that far with some people. And you're just going, and I'm a medium, and I'm going, you have an attachment here. You need to get rid of that. And I've worked with a demonologist who's gotten an attachment off of me because I felt angry and sad and depressed, and I didn't know why, and it was right in front of me, and it was a pretty strong one, and she got rid of it, and I was good from there. And then she gave me crap afterwards for not protecting myself properly, and now I do a ritual of protection, and I've never had anything in years.
What was attached to you?
I had a darker energy that wasn't even feeling like it was human, so I don't know what the attachment was, neither does Michelle. But we got rid of it. It took a little while. And within hours, I started to feel this relief and this release and this aggression. But again, this we just don't have human spirits in our universe. We have a lot more than just human beings, human spirits, you know? These are darker energies, maybe another dimensional side of it. And it's very hard to explain that when we just don't see the human spirit. We can see an ET spirit. We can see dimensional spirits. We can just feel mists, dark energy, shadow people, all of these type of things. They're all a part of that group. It's just that a majority of them never pay attention to us because we're not at that level with them. But if, as a psychic medium, there's so many different variations that I can see. And I guess I'm just one that's been lucky to see them all.
You said ET spirit. Do you believe that what we call aliens, because we don't fully understand whatever this phenomenon might be, are you saying that what we call aliens inhabit the same sort of spiritual realm as other beings, as other entities?
I feel like we have a lot of alien spirit on Earth as much as it would be anywhere else on our universe. We're not alone in spirit, in the dead, and they have just as much right to be here when they've passed on. And they really don't give us the right time of day, to be honest with you. They'll look at you and sort of you'll get acknowledged by their energy, but they move on. They don't stop and wait and have a conversation with me like a grandmother would have just passed away. They'll have a conversation with me, but not an alien. They don't have that at all.
Okay. Do you get a sense of where they might be from? There are lots of people who say that, you know, we may well be originally from Mars, for example.
Right. And there's different planets. I don't know enough about that, Howard, to say, but I do know that it's dimensional. It's a different part of the universe, and we certainly aren't alone, but there are so many different types of energies out there.
The normal course of events in a lifetime, is it meant to be, and sometimes that process gets corrupted, it seems from what you've been saying, is it meant to be that you have your life here, you meet your challenges, you right your wrongs if you can, and then you pass away, and you go to another dimension, and then you get reincarnated? But those ghosts and spirits that remain here are here for a reason. They're perhaps trapped by human emotions that were too intense or situations that were too intense to get out of. Is that the natural way of things? And what we call spirits that are trapped here or remain here, that's an aberration. That's a percentage, but most people go on the path that I described.
Howard, most people, for instance, who do not see the spirit world like we do, there are different dimensions that we're able to move through. There's multiple dimensions. There's multiple parts of our universe, galaxies that we haven't even explored. We're not an experiment by no means, but we're a residual of something that was from another planet, from another species, or whatever the case may be. We are all very, very in tuned. We all have an intuition. Just some of it is weaker or not strong at all, and some of us have an ability to see them all. But it's I'm in the human form, and I'm still in a human form. I don't believe that there's no alien side of me that I feel, but if I see an alien spirit, I know that there's more than just that out there. And I've never seen half alien and half human either. So I've never seen that either, but I see them. I'm just not being acknowledged by them in their spirit world, in their soul. We all have a soul. It's just one is higher than the other one. And we're human race is not one of the higher soul races for sure.
You know, I do talk about on these podcasts mainly, and also on the broadcast that I do. You know, I mention my parents because I was very, very close to them. And, you know, most people feel this way. I think, you know, it's a gap that can't be filled. It's a void for me that's, well, I'm hoping that I get to see them again at some point. You know, I don't know for definite, but I kind of feel that I might, and I hope that I do. In my mother's case, she was in hospital And I had no idea. She was quite ill. She'd neglected herself. She hadn't gone to the doctor with, you know, my father was complicit. They didn't want to involve the doctor. They wanted it all to go away. And it was terribly sad, really. You know, they just wanted to be together. They wanted any of the health problems to go away. And I think this story probably repeats in a lot of places. And by the time she got to hospital, she was in a very bad way with circulation that meant she had to lose one leg. And she was about to lose the other leg, the doctors decided, because she was in such a bad way, but she died before that happened. And I think in some ways that might have been a release, because I don't think she'd have enjoyed the life that she'd have lived. But, you know, we'll all miss her terribly. But in what turned out to be our final conversation, I visited her in hospital, not far from Liverpool. I had to get back to London to be back at work. And I, of course, I had no idea it was going to be the final conversation. We talked about some things from childhood, and she was under anesthetic to dull the pain from one amputation. I've never told the full story here, and it's not easy to tell when I say it in words. I can think about it and not get as upset as I think this might make me. But we had a conversation, and we ranged back to loving memories of childhood that we hadn't talked about for years. And then at the end of it, I basically told her, because my parents had got me out of a thousand scrapes, they'd always been there for me. And I didn't have the easiest of childhoods, difficult time at school, and getting into broadcasting, that's not an easy business either. And they were there for me 1,000 rock-solid percent all the way. And I said to my mother on that night in that hospital, and I thought I would see her again, I said, "Now, Mum, you've done so much for me. The future is all about you. You've got to get well, and it's all about you in the future. You've done everything for me. I'll be okay. I'll always be all right." And we told each other that we loved each other, and I walked through the door, drove back to London, and she died a couple of days later, and I never got to see her in life again. Now, the reason I'm telling you that story, and I've never asked anybody this, is I've always felt, and I've heard other people since tell me similar stories, you know, not on the radio or broadcast, that in some ways I gave her permission, that her work had been done here and it was time for her to go to something else. And my father, I've often thought he's around me, but my mother, I always felt, has been released. And I apart from one dream where I spoke with her, and I'm sorry for going on so much about this, but, you know, this may chime with other people. Apart from one dream where I spoke with her, I haven't really felt her around me. And I sometimes feel that maybe I kind of gave her permission, that it was okay to put the burden down and go on to something else. What do you make of that story, Jim?
It's absolutely beautiful and stunning that your mother was feeling the last part of her hurrah on this earth at that time. And it was not by choice that you went to go see your and visit your mom for the last time. You and I had a conversation right off at the beginning of our, before our this broadcast had started. I felt your mother's presence almost immediately. I felt your father standing beside you, both to your left. You gave your mom everything that she asked for. Your mom and your dad supported you because they loved what you did and they watched you enjoy yourself. They felt such courage that they didn't have that you brought to the forefront. The cockiness, the belief, the "I can do it, I'm going to get up that hill" kind of mentality that no one is going to take me prisoner. And you made a great life for yourself and your mother respected that. And when your mother saw you on those days, you were giving her permission to be happy. You were giving her permission to be, "It's okay. I've survived. I can do this. I can live my life and be as strong as I can." And it was a virtual spiritual hug that you were giving one another. Maybe you, unbeknownst to you, because your life was still busy, your mom was now starting to nest and get prepared for the end of her life. She just did not want to share that with everybody and make you worried. So she's beside you now. She loves what you're doing. She sees your intelligence, your way with words, your empathic side, the way that you've taken care of people. And she knows that you've been hurt in between. but you stood the strength of time, she says, and everything is there. And your father is the tough one and the loving one that shows that content. And he protects your mom and shrouds your mom. Your mom went directly to the light when she passed. She stayed there and she just made sure that everything was okay. But she has not come back to do another soul life. Her intent is to wait for you to say that everything that you've done is genuine and thank you so much. And then she'll maybe make another career and come back down here and do it all over again.
Boy. Well, you know, my apologies to my listener for that personal story, but it might chime with a lot of people who hear this. But I've always wondered about that almost giving of permission, you know, to say that the baton is now passed and you've done everything that humanly anybody could do for another human being. And, you know, the rest of your life, I want to be completely about you. It was a most surreal time, and it's something that I think maybe a lot of people face in their lifetimes, and I obviously have faced in mine. Now, the question of what happens when we die, of course, is uppermost with most people, I think, if they're honest, as they get older. And some people claim to have had a vision of what happens. An increasing number of people, because of medical technology, through so-called near-death experiences, they say that they go to another place, and sometimes, you know, they experience wonderful things. It's a beautiful place with wonderful colors, and then they contemplate whoever a guide might be over there who says, well, actually, your time has not come yet. And, you know, this happened also to my mother, funnily enough, when she was 10. She was very ill, and she went to a beautiful place that she always described to us. And I'm sorry, I'm telling this story on the podcast again. Forgive me for that. But she was told, no, you've got to go back, as many people are. So I suppose what I'm asking you is, the accounts of near-death experiences that are rather like that one, is that what happens generally when we die? You know, only we don't get to come back.
100%. And it's not so much as coming back as it is, we've grown our soul's intent in this life, and we're going to create another one. And we'll come back different for sure. But in that given situation, reviewing everything and saying it's not your time to come to the light, there were other things that they had to do to complete their soul's purpose. So your mother's intent was to do this and bring you up, do what you were doing and enjoying yourself and trying to do the best that she could with the knowledge that she had. So she was living her life to the best of her ability, and she needed to do that for the length of time that she stayed here on Earth. For us, we have a purpose. There is something here. We all live to do things. We all have to experience certain parts of our lives so that we can move dimensionally into another life, into another world, into a different prospect of what we're doing today. It's not always here on Earth. There are other parts of the universe that we were a part of that we need to just focus on and get to. And I find that we're not closed-minded now any longer when we have these near-death experiences, because 99% of those things are very, very beautiful experiences. The 1% is because I think we were in fear of what we did in this lifetime and we're going to be punished. So we stayed in that direction. But a majority of us were seeing only good and we're coming back to do it all over again in a better way. But that's how I see it.
All right. Now, this may be unfair to ask it, but I'll ask it anyway. Can you think of cases that you can tell me about? You don't have to name the names of people who are involved in those cases, where whatever you're in contact with has given you a crucial piece of information, like the jewelry was always underneath the bed. You know, it was all the dollars are stitched into the mattress, or that car that you that disappeared is actually in a lockup garage in Monaco now. Or I mean, they're silly and trivial examples, but I think you know the direction of travel that I'm going in here. Can you think of cases where you have divined information that could not have been got in any other way that has made a material difference to somebody's life? In other words, the location of the lost will document or something like that, something practical.
I would have to get my clients to basically say the thing and information that I've given them, because I just repeat what I'm being told by a spirit by a spirit and give them the message. And they say, that was profound. Thank you so much. I've got closure immediately. I feel so good now. I don't feel like I'm in this vice of emotions or this catastrophe in my life is going to change now because you gave me information from my father that I didn't get, that I needed to have so I can have closure, so I can move forward. It's usually I'm giving information that I don't even know that I'm giving, that is giving them closure, and it gives them affirmation and gives me affirmation saying, you helped me change my direction in my life because of the information that you gave me from my mother, from my father, from a close friend, from someone that committed suicide. You gave me closure for all of that, and now I can move forward and move and be better for it. When my mother, for instance, she was a very strong intuitive. She didn't share her gift a lot with everyone, and a lot of things that went on were very quiet, and it was the 60s, so you didn't say very much. When I held my mother's hand when she was dying, she just said, it's not going to be easy for you, but as you get older, things will get so much better and you're going to be that much happier. Just enjoy what you have now. And she came out of a coma from a Molotov cocktail dying of cancer. And I got that message. And the warmth of her hand when she gave me the message was amazing. I cried. She cried for 10 seconds. She took her last breath, and I got to be with her for that time. I was blessed as compared to everybody else because she gave birth to me and allowed me to live. And I was her oldest son, and I was there to hold on to her hand as she passed away. I couldn't have asked for a better story for myself.
It's a wonderful story. And is that the way it's been, do you think, Jim? Has it been better as you got older?
She was like bang on. I'm in the most happiest time of my life. I have a beautiful 5-year-old daughter that we did not have a very good chance of having. I have an amazing, strong wife. I have a good life. And I didn't know that I was going to have this opportunity to do this all over again. And I've never been happier.
Right. And you know, we've talked about the era that you came from, the 60s. Mm-hmm. You were educated, so you know, you don't have to be a Philadelphia lawyer to work out that you're in your 60s.
Yes.
And you've got a 5-year-old now. That must be an amazing experience at this time of life.
Oh my gosh. It is. And she's intuitive, which is even crazier. Mm.
And how do you know that?
Well, my wife and I, 2 Christmases ago, were lying in bed with her, and we read her stories, and we talk about the day. We really have a very strong conversation and a connection. So we finished reading the stories, and the lights were out, and she's ready for her nap or her bedtime. And she said, Mom, Dad, why do you have rainbows on your fingers? She's able to see aura colors. And so we haven't discouraged it, encouraged it, or anything, but she is an intuitive, and she knows what's going on. She's 5 years old, going on 50, and she knows when she's going to have a bad day. I don't want to go to school today. I'm not going to be happy. And she'll come home, and it's not that she's put it in her head. She just knows that some kids were not doing very well in kindergarten, and they were creating a ruckus. She says, I didn't want to be there, Daddy, because I knew it was going to happen.
So how are you going to handle that? Because there are many people who would say that, you know, you don't want to be reading into her things that are coming from you. You know,
right.
It's her life and she's got to live it. So I would guess that if that's the direction that she's going to go in, have you decided that, you know, if the questions come up, then you'll help, but you're not going to push her in that direction. Is that right?
That's 100% correct. My mom didn't do it. You understand, she's 5 years old. There's no reasoning attached to her yet. Everything that's coming out of her mouth is an honest opinion.
Pure intuition.
Truth. Mm. And it's just, she's just doing her thing. And she, when I was not feeling good, she will place her hand on my chest and just say, oh, you're going to feel better soon, Daddy.
Oh, boy.
So she does those things, and she knows those things. And she's just very, very good at what she does. So, and I don't want to put her into what, I don't want to throw her to the wolves in what's happening here. She is just allowed to be this 5-year-old to have fun because we don't even bring it up. We let her talk. We say, oh, wow, that's really cool. That's awesome. And she just goes about back to playing with her Barbies.
Well, that's good. That sounds very healthy. Now, this is the kind of conversation that I don't have on the show that often, but I think my listener knows that I'm interested in these things, and I would like to believe that this life is not all there is. Otherwise, what is the point? Is where I'm coming. And, you know, they, if they've listened to me long enough, they will know that. But there will be people, if they've listened this far and they are skeptical, and I get emails from those people as well as from the people who will say, bravo for having Jim Hunt on your show. There will be people who say, that guy was talking a complete load of horse poo. what do you want to have people like that on your show for? Mm-hmm. You've heard those things before. What do you say to them?
I have to allow them to feel what they want to feel. Remember, I'm in my 60s. We come from an era of being seen and not heard. And it's true even today to a lot of our general public and our world. If they don't believe, they don't have to. I'm never going to push or shove something down your throat. But I will definitely ask you certain questions to say, how come you feel this way? What is it that makes you feel that you're going to condemn me for the way that I feel when I've never judged you for 30 seconds? And it's always this, it's a judgmental world that we live in, and we are scared or afraid of the unknown. And when the unknown is there, we either have to accept it and try and ask more questions as to why, or to bury it and just say, that guy's a clown. I never want to talk to him again. I don't want to see that type of person. Or you get, as you say, hate mail, which I've had before in the past, and it's okay. I just don't answer it. I take it with a grain of salt, because everybody has an opinion. And if we didn't have that opinion, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Last question. If you were to go to a haunted location, rather like, is it the British line of the Queen Mary, isn't it, that's now permanently docked in the United States?
I should
know that. In Florida, I think. I'm sorry that I haven't got that information at my fingertips, sadly enough, but it's said to be a highly haunted vessel. If you were to go to that highly haunted vessel, could you guarantee that you would be picking things up there?
Yes, 100%, and only because I've been there.
Have you? How strange that I should ask you. Okay, so what happened then?
It's just a place where, how do I say that? It sits, you're there, water is an energy and a conduit to start off with. It's mutatable. You can use the energy, and it actually opens up a lot of different types of fields of energy, different levels of it. And a lot of them who have passed on or have hurt themselves in there, it's because it's energy that wants to talk and be saved. It's energy that wants to go in there to give us a warning. Because a lot of spirits will act like the spirit police and just say, you shouldn't be with that man, because you'll get that in your ear. Somebody will say, don't be with that person beside you, they're dangerous. That's the type of energy that goes out there. The little girl that had drowned in the pool, she's there to protect any other little child that's walking with you. And you can feel the vice-like energy to make sure that you're holding your daughter's hand or your son's hand when you're walking into that area. It is that amplified in there. And it's, none of them are mean. There's not one, I did not pick up one horrible haunting in there whatsoever.
But the ship is haunted. I want to see it one of these days. I'm not sure whether it's open at the moment. And of course, forgive my senior moment for just forgetting, it's in California.
It is in California. Right. Yeah.
Well, one of these days I might get to see it.
Oh, you would love it. You would just, just the size of the ship. I've never been on I've been on a warship, but I've never been on a cruise ship like it was. And it's just amazing. It was just something I couldn't believe.
Well, it's on my to-do list. Let's put it that way. People want to learn more about you, Jim. Where do they go?
Well, everything is very easy. It's jimhuntofficial.com. I'm on Instagram at jimhuntofficial, Twitter, jimhuntofficial, And I'm about to start my own podcast called White Noise at the end of May.
White Noise. Okay. After the movie.
After the movie. I guess it must be.
Well, no, I guess so. But, you know, you're allowed to have the title too. Jim, thank you so much.
This was a pleasure. Thank you so much for this.
Your thoughts, as ever, welcome about Medium Jim Hunt. You can go to my website, theunexplained.tv, follow the email link, and you can communicate with me from there. More great guests in the pipeline here at the home of The Unexplained Online. So until we meet next, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained, and please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.